You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right. Francis Albert Sinatra. That's playing Frank on S Day. Today's Q Day. We're getting there. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Christopher DeSimone, Tommy Callahan. We're going to talk to Supervisor Steve Christie in just a minute or two. Remember, we have a party coming up, a happy hour, our spring soiree at St. Philip's Plaza. It's coming up on Tuesday. Party starts at 5. Live music begins at 6. It's an outdoor event. It's Taco Tuesday, Tequila Tuesday. You'll be happy. It'll be fine. The weather will be beautiful on next Tuesday. Please join us. Let me know you're coming at wakeuptucsoncomments@gmail.com. Tomorrow, fun show. We got Margaret Coker. She's the author of Spy Master of Baghdad. Congressman Schweikert, and making his re-debut after at least a couple of years, is Governor Doug Ducey at 8:07. AM. So they called me yesterday with one little question, and I literally, when I saw it was the governor's office, I said, did he cancel? You know, but he didn't. Still happening at 8:07. So please join us for that. Let's talk to Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie, the county that Bruce Ash, he named it beautifully yesterday, the region where we poor mouth it and half ass it for years. Good morning.
Well, that about covers it, doesn't it?
Steve and I are going to get breakfast now.
Before we move on, I got to really quickly talk about listening to Matt Healy coming over.
Yeah.
And he was talking about the Bola ties.
Yes.
As you know, my family had a car dealership, and I eventually took it over. And when I first started, we sold AMCs, American Motors products.
Sure.
And one of the at that time, one of the more popular brands or models that we had was the AMC Gremlin.
Yes.
And it had an emblem, a hood ornament of a kind of a cartoonish looking gremlin.
Okay.
But it was pretty colorful. It had blue eyes and it was silver and it stood up pretty profoundly. And we were finding that they were getting stolen and people were knocking them off the hoods of the gremlins and stealing the actual gremlin piece itself to make bolo ties.
Wow.
And matter of fact, I remember my body shop manager, he did it with one as well. And he for years, wore a bolo tie with an AMC Gremlin emblem.
Who knew? Who knew? Now, I assume you own a bolo tie or two.
I do, that were passed down to me from relatives and
okay.
things. But I don't, I'm not a bolo aficionado where... I'm just not.
Well, this is the week we could be wearing it because it would be rodeo week.
Yes.
If we did a rodeo week.
I think even, not to disparage those who like the bolo ties, and there's some beautiful artwork that is associated with them, but I'm just not a, even with rodeo shirts and jeans and things, I'm just not a bolo person.
So, and you know what really sucks about not having the Tucson Rodeo is we've really learned in the back end that outdoor events have no effect in relation to Rona spread.
Exactly. And that we've seen this in other large venues of athletic events where there's been a significant amount of participants. There's been no spikes, no evidence that this is a creation of more transmission. And of course, the other thing that's so frustrating and so painful is the devastation that is wreaked upon a community, particularly ours, that has so many large annual venues. The Tucson Open, we can only have 200 guests a day. And even Phoenix, Maricopa County, they allowed up the Phoenix 5,000 a day. But of course, you know, up there they had hundreds of thousands attending, and we did too down here in Tucson. We had, you know, 20,000-30,000 a day, and it was kind of nip and tuck there for a while whether or not the conquistadors were going to be able to even get 200 a day allowed through the health department. But apparently they did. So
200 on an 18-hole golf course
out in the sun,
it's stupid.
Crammed quarters. And
so think about it. You would think that the county would be all over trying to contact trace a breakout from the Trump rally.
Yeah.
Right? There were like 12,000 people shoulder to shoulder at that. You'd figure Chuck and those guys be running around going, super spreader event. And they could never came up.
Yeah, and I don't see too much evidence of a contract tracing period. And second of all, what are you going to do with it, and how are you going to do with it, and what kind of data are you trying to extrapolate from all that, and what at the end of the whole process is the good stuff that's supposed to come from that data?
I'm pretty sure that the county has already said that the contact tracing really hasn't been effective, but yeah. We keep wanting to do it, and whenever you see effective strategies to reduce coronavirus, they would say, we got to have robust.
Mm-hmm. I like that word, but sometimes it's misused.
Let's do a shameless plug. For robust, I like my coffee from Filthy Pirate to be robust but low acid.
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring it there.
Good example.
So, Steve, I was thinking about this. I was talking to Bill number two today this morning, and we were talking about he got his valuation from the county on his house, right? And, of course, it's super terrific high, right? And we thought about it. This is a dream world for Huck and the crew right now that they're in, right? Think about this. So now with valuations and real estate as high as ever, they're going to be able to pound the crap out of you even better for your property taxes, right? So that's number one. Two, they got Fed money flowing all over the place and probably more coming their way, right? So they're flush with dough, no matter how much he says he doesn't have cash for doing COVID testing, right? He has an opportunity to always crap on the state of Arizona, right? Got news, and he gets to say it's lives, right? Also, they love the lockdown controls. They just love them. And with no open real meetings anymore, they don't have to put up with peons talking to them anymore.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good deal to me if I were in them. The other thing is they won't even contemplate or allow any kind of other data that is cropping up very predominantly across the country and throughout the world about herd immunity and...
Can't say that. That's a dirty word.
Oh, I said it at the joint meeting at the city council, and I was batted down right away by Councilman Kotachik is throwing out numbers. And herd immunity and the fact that the daily transmission rates are dropping and hospitalizations and ventilator use and all of that are way down there, and the hospitals are now utilizing more of their beds for elective surgery, which is how they make their money. We're not allowed to discuss those things because right now we have the pandemic is still in its very serious stage, and we have to do everything we can to mitigate that at the expense of businesses and the community and community events and
kids and their schooling
and schools and athletics, parks and recs down in Green Valley. They have a softball league called the Baja Softball League down there, and Baja stands for something old jocks that are coming back, and it's a great community event.
Sounds like the Born Again Jock Born Again Jocks Association,
something like that. Yeah, and they have a really robust softball
for the hour
schedule, and they got locked out and they lost their whole season, and this was something that they work so hard for every year. And it's just very sad that something like that, which would help people stay healthy, get them outdoors, and not have any exposure to the virus, but no, they locked them out of the ballpark.
Steve, one last question before we go to break. Did anyone mention or malign the fact that the suicide rate amongst 12 to 17-year-olds in Pima County in the fourth quarter was up 67%?
I hadn't heard that, certainly not during any meetings.
All right. I felt great pity for you. You have a nice life. You're a supervisor. You've done well in the business world. But I really felt amazing, giant amounts of pity for you watching you with those 11 folks.
Well, it certainly was an experience. And I have to say that I owe Mayor Romero and Chair Bronson a great deal of acknowledgement for putting that meeting together, because from this point forward, I think no matter where my career goes, I know I have reached the pinnacle when I could be known forever in the halls of Pima County history, that in this historic joint meeting between the City of Tucson and the Pima County Board of Supervisors, I was the only Republican present. So that will remain with me throughout history.
Well, 40 years from now, we're going to put that on your gravestone.
I can't wait. What are we doing Friday?
8:17 in the morning. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 790-2040. This is I'm in Love with My Car with robust vocals by drummer Roger Taylor.
Is it a gremlin?
Thank you. It's a gremlin. That's not bad. It's all coming together on one bump. There's the Quicksilver, the QMS, as we like to say. You're on Wake Up Tucson. We're on a Q day here on a Wednesday. If you miss anything, KVY.com. Tomorrow we got Congressman David Schweikert with his weekly call-in and Governor Doug Ducey making his re-debut, as we like to call it, on Wake Up Tucson. We're hanging out with Supervisor Steve Christie. Steve, we had Ted Maxwell on the show Monday, just gushing over the $10 million for childhood early education. This is another 10 mil. We can't find money for testing people because they're going to die, but that's the state's fault. But we can find $10 million for this situation, which we have no idea where the money's going to. It's cute.
Well, this is another example that doesn't seem to be part of the whole discussion. As you well know, that this issue came before the city of Tucson and was defeated soundly. It came before the Board of Supervisors a couple of years ago, and it was defeated at that venue as well. And it was interesting to me in the discussion of this $10 million appropriation just taken out of the found and taken out of the general fund. Mr. Huckleberry had written a rather, I don't want to quite say scathing, but a very firm opposition memorandum to taking general fund money for pre-K a couple of years ago. And I questioned him about it. What has changed since then to today where we can justify finding $10 million for the general fund from the general fund for pre-K? And he basically said, well, this is just a political direction that and procedural direction that the board wants to pursue, and we're glad to take the opportunity to try to see what we can do to accommodate it. And I'm going, but you just said a little while ago, 2 years ago, barely, that you would never and you would not recommend to, supporting pre-K at the county level for a host of reasons. Those reasons still exist, but your whole approach now is, well, we'll take a look at it and see what we can do. I didn't understand that, but I think the most ham-fisted issue was what do I say to my constituents who daily email me, write me, call me, many in the business community who I think is the most vulnerable community we have, or certainly ranks up with all of the other vulnerable communities. And they're just in anguish and in full anxiety and very emotional that they are facing bankruptcy and closing their businesses and laying off their employees and ending all of their life's work and all of their full investments that they put into this dream. And they say, what do we do? And how can I justify taking $10 million that we find out of the general fund for pre-K education? $10 million can go a long way to assisting shuttering businesses and assisting failing businesses that really need the help. And then you can go on with the list. How do I justify to homeowners associations that they haven't had their roads in front of their houses repaired in 40 years? And then we can find $10 million for pre-K, but we can't fix their roads that have never been looked at in decades. How can I talk to law enforcement community members who have said, I haven't had a raise, I haven't had even a cost of living raise for a number of years, and then we find $10 million out of the budget that goes to pre-K. How do I justify that to the law enforcement community?
How about all these seniors we were just talking about in Green Valley that need a ride to go get a vaccine and all of these different things, and they're despondent, and we're talking about this issue?
Well, exactly.
Eye on the ball,
and
kids.
And here is another part of that equation. In Mr. Huckleberry's memo, he said the only way that that pre-K could be adequately funded was to take it out of and raising property taxes. And I'm saying, well, how do I justify it to fixed income retirees who are struggling to put food on the table and keep their homes, but you can find $10 million for pre-K? It doesn't make sense. It's a lovely idea, but it's a $10 million experiment. And I don't think it's a $10 million experiment that we can afford. And certainly, if we can find $10 million for pre-K, then our priorities need to be readjusted to really address the issues that are facing us so blatantly and so horrifically in Pima County.
When you were saying about vulnerable communities, as it started formulating in my brain, right? Very few groups of people who aren't tied to the power of Pima County are not vulnerable.
Yeah. Well, we had a discussion a couple of times when Supervisor Villegas was on the board during her interim term. She presented a resolution that said in so many words that there is such a disparity in health care between communities of color, and that it was the equivalent of institutional racism. And I'm trying to find some kind of thread where I can do what everybody's asking me to do very often, is to collaborate with my colleagues on the board and find common ground and try to work together. And I told Supervisor Villegas that I could find something in this resolution that I could grasp onto. I said, but in your whole presentation, you've forgotten, you've left out, you've ignored the most vulnerable and devastated community in our county, and that's the elder community. They can't drive to Tucson for vaccinations. They are not computer savvy. They're scared to death. They're isolated. They've suffered as much, if not more, in many cases, than any other community. And she absolutely refused to amend her resolution to include them. If she had, I may have been able to support it. But at that point, she wasn't going to allow that to be included.
Sad to say, when you see everything in narrow racial kind of goggles here, right?
Well, it seemed that
the elder people you're talking about that are suffering so hard include white people.
Sure.
So Betty didn't want to actually put them in there.
I would say that was certainly in the mix, because she was quite vehement about not including the elder community into this resolution.
It's a nice county you got here, Christy. All right, when we come back, Bunker, hold on. We'll get to your question. Maybe he's got some Western movies for Steve he can share with us. And then we're going to talk about this thing at the state, the idea of expanding the Board of Supervisors from 5 to 7. So we'll do that. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30, The Voice. Oh, no. 8:35 in the morning. A little quiet riot at 8:35. We're hanging out with Supervisor Steve Christie. Quiet riot. That's a perfect name for that meeting you guys had on Friday with the Board of Supes and the City Council.
Yeah, I was ruled out of order.
You were ruled out of order?
Oh, yes.
What'd you do?
Well, I asked a question to the mayor and council about... with all of the businesses, they were patting themselves on the backs about how they were going to open the parks back up, and the schools were starting to slowly come around to opening up. And I said, well, this is great that you're very focused on the schools and the parks. I said, but the most exposed and vulnerable community, too, that you haven't mentioned is our business community. And I would like some direction, Mayor Romero and the council members. Give me some direction on how I respond to my constituents in the business community when they're faced with shuttering their business and losing their employees and losing their livelihood. And yet, at the same time, Mayor Romero, you've made it very well known and very clear that Tucson is a very welcoming community to undocumented persons, and that Tucson will accommodate them and make sure that they're taken care of, have access to all of the public services and all of the expenses therein, yet you are still compiling these restrictions on the business community. And once I mentioned undocumented persons, city attorney Rankin ruled me out of order, and I couldn't speak anymore. And Chair Bronson agreed that was not on the agenda. It came under business restrictions. And then at the same time, they patted themselves on the back for helping navigate businesses to the government funding of support, the PPP and all that. And Councilman Cunningham even said, you know, we expected that somewhere around 50 to 60% of businesses, particularly in the restaurant industry, were going to fail. Well, it's only down to, it's only coming to fruition that it's about 25 to 35%. And I said,
Was that a pat on the back moment? Is that what he wanted?
I said, that's great for you to be so self-laudatory on that. I'd hope you talk to those 25 to 35% business owners, but I have to point out to this mayor and council right now that at this very meeting, you just enjoined in an amicus brief unanimously to join Pima County in reinstating the curfew. You just have doubled down on the mask wearing mandate and making employees of businesses the mask police. Neither are what you could call business friendly gestures. And
you made a good point about the curfew off air. You were telling me that if they kicked in the curfew because there was so many infections per 100,000 or whatever. Yeah. And we've been way below that.
Yeah, if you look at the averages or the methodology that they're using to determine that the curfew is a very important issue to keep in place and that it needs to be appealed and reinstated, their own data shows that their threshold to keep that they inflicted the curfew was for on average 200. Infections per every 100,000. Well, we're down in the low 20s now, right? And have been, and we've been way below that level, and still they're fighting to appeal this.
I feel like this is all over. They're going to be like that Japanese soldier they found on the one of those islands in the Pacific that didn't know the war was over, mm-hmm. and he's still fighting. Yeah. That's going to be Rahina, Bronson, and Chuck still suing Grant Kruger and the crew over the
and there is no acknowledgement by those folks that you just mentioned or any other elected officials that I deal with that understand that time frame is the most lucrative time frame in the restaurant business for them to do their business and to make money, and they're cutting the guts out of it.
Well, and at the same time, I think health-wise, if you shut down all the bars at 10, all those people are going to do, they're all going to congregate in the house and give each other corona if someone really had it.
That's the a big element of proof, too, to the issue on this curfew.
Right, because they always say, oh, those house parties at the U of A, they're so dangerous.
Well, if they can't go to public places to enjoy each other's company, where the hell are they going to go?
Amen. I had Bunker on hold for 28 minutes here, so I want to get back to this young man. Bunker, what do you got for me today, sir? And Steve and Supervisor Christie, what's up?
Well, as a member of the elder group, as I prefer to call myself, the Over the Hill Gang, I have some experiential stuff with Parks and Rec. I've been going down to El Rio Rec Center here for several years, and of course, you know, I have a pretty good feeling of what's happening there. One of the things is I use the gym, and you know, most of the people that are in the gym are in the 50, 60, 70, 80 bracket. Most of the time, I'm the only one in there about 90% of the time. But the people that need to be in that gym and working out the most are the elders. And they, you know, most of them are there because I would talk to them. They're there because their doctors want them there. So what is happening? These people can't get out. They can't get. There was one lady. Her son would bring her in. She was 90 years old. he would help her. He would actually be doing most of the work on the machines. But she was there faithfully, you know, trying to stay alive, trying to think. The other thing, I would use their computer room because I don't have a computer. And that's where I did most of my research. Well, I'm in there, you know, I'd be in there 2, 3, 4 hours sometimes on a day, with the exception of a herd of kids coming in for about 20 minutes every once in a while. That room is totally empty.
So where are we going with all this, my friend?
I talked to several people in Parks and Rec over the period of the last year saying, hey, guys, you need to get this place open so that folks can get in there and get some life in their life. And it's sad because, you know, they can't. It's like, a week before they shut down, I renewed for another year. It's just so crazy. And I want to make one more comment so that you can get back to Steve. One of the reasons I like him so much is, one, he comes from a ranching family. He was raised with common sense and practicality, and that's what you hear in what he's telling us. The rest of these bozos need to get in touch with life and reality, because they're impacting people's lives, just like you guys are saying, the older people, that they don't have recourse. They can't go out and do the things that, you know, young kids can run up to Mount Lemmon and go hiking or skiing now that there's a little snow. I know I'm rambling, and I want to get off so you guys can continue.
Well, those are great comments, and thank you for them. And to give you another blend of what is happening in those very instances you just relayed, I have a good friend who runs it's really not a gym, it's a recovery therapy facility for folks who have had either operations, surgical procedures, or need some type of rehab. And they really are desperate to carry on the protocols that they are required to do after surgeries and after hip implants and things of this nature. And if they don't get that type of rehab care and attention, it really has extraordinarily detrimental effects on their physical and mental health, particularly their physical health. And then when they're locked out and they can't see their therapist because of these impositions of these restrictions and protocols, what are they going to do? How are they going to recover? Where's their life going to end up with?
Amen. Bunker, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Steve and I are going to talk about expanding the Pima County Board of Supervisors, if you will.
So you like the odds they are now? You want them to be...
That's right. They'll be 22-1 the next joint meeting.
I can't wait to go to Las Vegas.
Queensryche Empire, one of the official songs of Pliskin Acres. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. All right, 8:48 in the morning. Great cover of Watchtower by my boys. It's Quango. It's a little short-term group, John Wett and Carl Palmer, but good stuff. You can catch it on YouTube, not on Spotify. I do own the CD, though. All right, 8:48 in the morning. Tom Callahan, Christy Simone, Supervisor Steve Christie, and we did a whole day of Q groups today. Tomorrow, R, so going to be massive tomorrow. We're going to make a lot of hard decisions tomorrow, Callahan. So, and then Doug Ducey's going to come on, and we're going to have our first discussion since all of this stuff happened. And so we're going to talk about his evolution in decision-making, the moment he decided he was never, ever going to shut the state down like he did before, and then also the school things. You know, might be time for him to use some of that executive power and say, kids need to go back to school. You know, it was cute that he delegated to the counties and the school districts, but I've kind of told some people in his crew that he kind of threw us to the wolves.
Yeah, he I think he had some unintended consequences there that he didn't consider, because obviously those were some of the most well-received words from the governor that certain entities were glad to get, that they could control issues like closures and
masks
and all of this stuff, which, you know, there's obviously it's coming around now with the curfew decision that it that in imposing a curfew is unconstitutional and exceeds the governor's executive orders. So,
when I was talking to some of the people that were in that courtroom when the judge decided to do the temporary injunction, it's like Pima County had nothing to offer on why, right? There's no science on curfew, right? And then trying to explain to the judge why it's not violating Doug's order, right? And then she gave her another shot at the end. No, really, before I adjourn this thing and make my decision, what do you got for me? And they spent another half hour with, like, nothing.
Yeah. And now we're seeing that the threshold of relieving the curfew was based on a certain criteria, and that we've been way below that criteria for some time and are now.
It's a weird county you got here, buddy. It's a little weird. So J.D. Mesnard, a Republican, has this the old 1498-er, as I call it, SB 1498-er, that would increase the Board of Supes of Maricopa from 5 to 9 and the Pima Board of Supes from 5 to 7.
Aren't they happy with the odds now?
So the person that came out against this in this Howie Fisher story is Victoria Steele, okay, Democrat from Tucson. And when you hear this excuse, it starts to make, because I was like you, I'm kind of like, oh, really? But then when she's complaining about the unfunded mandate that the taxpayer would have to pay $1 million for two more offices, I said, when a Democrat's worried about the taxpayer dollar, there might be some sort of merit here.
Yeah, she stumbled onto something. Or maybe just stumbled.
I feel like maybe, and I haven't totally kind of vetted this thing with people who are smarter on me on some of the numbers, but maybe, Steve, does it maybe have a couple of more balanced districts?
That's maybe. You're going to be obviously spreading out the boundaries, which would be, and I hate to use the word, maybe more inclusive as far as getting a different mix within those boundaries.
Especially if they did a robust redistricting.
Yeah, and followed the metrics and the science.
Thank you. We're going to do all of them today.
I can't help but say, but my first thought goes back to Roosevelt packing the Supreme Court.
Right.
But, Maricopa County, I think, does have something of an issue. In Pima County, where we are in a $200,000 constituent level. And I think what I understand...
935
in Maricopa. So there could be some issues that could give a compelling argument to expand, perhaps. I'd like to have a more robust discussion on this.
Well played, Stephen. So my thing is, why did Mesnard include Pima? Someone asked him to include Pima, right? Because I don't think it talks about... I don't know if it talks about the other counties in it or not. This thing talks about Maricopa. Maybe they're over a certain threshold.
I saw no mention of any other counties.
I mean, they're the two biggest. They have million plus. Maybe there's a population threshold to this thing. But in the end, he could have said counties with a population over 3 million.
Yeah.
Right, and not drop it down to include Pima. So someone asked him to include Pima.
And I think we ought to find out who that person was or what was the motivation that wanted him or caused him to include Pima County.
Well, we'll find out. Let's get to one of our favorite subject. Let's go to roads. All right. Is there any... I mean, Rex Scott, after I started mentioning recalls, all of a sudden he's my best buddy in the world, was sending something about... roads, the Huckleberry Pay-Go thing, like where are we at with all that junk?
It seemed to be more like a statement of acknowledgement rather than anything precise as far as changing anything. He wanted to see or discuss if there was a way to increase the 10-year plan that the Pay-Go system has developed to perhaps shorten it to a 6 or 7 year plan. Good discussion. That's fine. He wanted to also suggest that since there are some monies that have not been spent on older road improvement projects, that perhaps we start to spend on those and begin those projects so they just don't languish and go away, with the hopes that the balance of the money, $70 million would be made available over the next couple of years. But it was kind of, I think, his way of announcing that he is very much involved in roads and wants to see that the programs continue, and that this discussion include the Pima Association of Governments, and that we contact Farhad Mugimi with some direction on these things. It was, I think, more of a statement, as I said, rather than actual hard direction. So I was kind of a little bit confused as to which direction and why he was going.
It was a fluffy restatement of pretty much all the crap we've already been doing.
It's already existent, and the plan is in place. And
how much money are we talking about in this PAYGO thing over 10 years? How much roughly are we talking about?
I believe it was somewhere just shy of $500 million, $460 million. I think that the concept is good. I've supported it, and I don't want it to fall off the radar as far as all these other issues that are coming before the board. I don't want to lose our motivation and momentum on addressing our road needs, obviously. But as far as Supervisor Scott, I think he just wanted to reaffirm. And by the way, he is now the county's representative on PAG and RTA to replace Ramon Valadez.
Well, again, from what you hear, he loves anything Huckleberry comes up with, so it sounds like he just regurgitated some Huckleberry-ness.
Well, he's very supportive of County Administrator Huckleberry, that's for sure.
And District 1 roads, just like District 4 roads, are absolute trash.
Yep. We're making some headway here and there, but they are.
I am blown away. We only got about a minute. Every time I go out to that Vail area,
mm-hmm.
It's us off the wall. What's getting the amount of houses and really, you know, commercial stuff.
Yeah, it's growing. It's blossoming. And that's why it's so important that we keep up with our infrastructure on those things. Real quick, one thing that I'm finding more with my constituents, a concern, is the trash along our roadways and highways. And they are absolutely right. It's horrible. And we've had some very poignant discussions with ADOT and PDOT and other entities that are involved that are responsible for making sure that one of the reasons people moved to unincorporated Pima County like Vail and Coronado Tucson is because of the scenic beauty and the environmental attributes that give it that absolutely pristine high Sonoran Desert look. And now it's just strewn with just, if you've been on I-10 heading towards El Paso.
Oh, yeah.
It's just awful. Then you have Sabarita Road, you have Houghton Road, and a number of other major thoroughfares that are just god-awful with trash. So we talked to what we think are the appropriate entities, and of course there's many in that area, and their singular rationale for not being able to keep up with the trash cleanup is COVID.
Oh, my Lord Jesus.
Because they had been using the Department of Corrections, and now there's a health concern for the inmates and the public that it could transmit COVID that would not allow them.
Masks, Stephen? Dr. Fauci, if they wear three masks, the COVID can't touch them.
Yeah, and for them to be out in the open in the sunshine and the fresh air, exercising by cleaning up this trash, maybe it could be a positive and beneficial thing. But apparently it's not, and as a result, we have nothing but garbage dumps along our roadways.
You know, that's a perfect place to end. Stephen, good seeing you again.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for your service.
You bet.
Thanks for being on
for
being on that wall.
One other thing.
30 seconds.
I love being supervisor, so thank you.
Yeah, you keep saying that. God bless you. I thought about that when I was watching you with those 11 folks or 10 folks
that was
on Friday.
That was a real I love being supervisor.
Zach's coming up next. Billy Buckmaster at noon. Governor Ducey tomorrow in the 8 o'clock hour. Tom, have a good day, sir.